This podcast is from heptagonclub.co.uk and paulcarenza.com. The Heptagon Club.
Heptagon Club.
Heptagon Club with Paul Carenza. 7 guests, 7 corners.
On this week's show.
I saw Paul Daniels make an elephant disappear.
Actually, we don't think it's possible to fool Pennington.
I read The God Delusion. It was the closest I came to becoming a Christian.
The only operation in medical history with a 300% mortality rate.
And your host,
Mr. Paul Carenza.
Welcome, podcast listeners. Happy November to you. Sorry this is a bit late as podcasts go. We had no podcast in October because, I got a bit ill, really. So I lost about 2 weeks to that, never eating seafood paella again. I'm well now, thank you for asking. I'm sure that you intended to ask, even if you didn't say anything out loud. So what's been going on then? Well, loads. It's a busy time of gigs for me in my stand-up capacity. If you'd like to come and see any, it's mostly comedians and carol shows in December. You can come and seek us out, paulcarenza.com. If you would like to offer me any stand-up work or some writing or whatever you've got going, really. Painting and decorating would be fine too. If you're in a position to do so, if you've got a venue, something like that, that might need a comedian to come and do a show, drop me a line. Anyway, speaking of which, the future of this podcast, right? We are anticipating a bit of a gap after the next couple of episodes. So we've got December in the bag. That's okay. We've got a Christmas special. That will be lovely. January, yes, another 7 guests are lined up. After that, it's probably the end of season 2. So we are expecting a bit of a big gap then. How long? Well, that is up to you. At the moment, a few of you generous folks have donated. A giant thank you to you. It does warm my cockles and keeps this crazy idea going a little while longer. But if you've not donated and you like this podcast, do consider bunging us some quids. It costs me, and right now I can't justify spending ages making new episodes and recording chats and seeking guests when there's writing work to be done, gigs to be had, etc. But we will definitely come back after January. It just could be in April, could be in July, who knows. But if you were to visit heptagonclub.co.uk, find the donate button or the Patreon button for regular giving and benefits, and that will lure us back all the quicker after our break in early 2018. But anyway, let's not bring the mood down with talk of money and absence of podcasts. We've got 7 guests this episode waiting to come in, and it's freezing outside the doors of the Heptagon Club. We should really be letting them in. So coming up this week, a lot of magic, a lot of comedy and magic and a bit of religion and all that sort of stuff in there. So we've got John Archer, who is the country's finest comedy magician, according to the Magic Circle, of all people. Also magazine editors, Steve Legg, Justin Briley, rival magazine editors, I suppose. I may have made that one up, but equally all magazine editors, I suppose, are rivals, really, for our attentions. They're talking magic and atheism and religious debate and things like that. We've got return visits from previous Heptagon Club guests like Carl Donnelly, that's Chortle's Comedian of the Year, and Stephen Colgan, the QI Elf. And our rule really is 7 guests a week, and they can be anyone from any capacity, and just depends who I've bumped into, really. So this month, first up, who is about to walk in the door? But my comedy brother, this is Mr. Andy Kind. Andy Kind!
Hello.
Welcome to the Heptagon Club podcast.
I'm just on Instagram.
Are you?
Yeah.
Get you down with the kids.
Yeah. I don't really understand it. It's pictures, isn't it?
I've never done Instagram. I always thought like an Etch-a-Sketch or something, but it's a different thing.
It's basically holiday photos with the worst ones taken out.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
But I've only got on it because I was bored, and right. I've heard that social media is a really good way of filling a hole in your life.
That's true.
Like in real,
yes.
Real yeah. Fullness, real yeah. Fulfillment. Yeah. So.
As a comedian, you're a comedian, you're an author, you run a conference centre now as well.
Is that right? Retreat centre.
A retreat yeah. centre, not a conference. There are no conferences here. There are no conferences.
We're here for the conference, well, you've come to the wrong place.
You have. We're here for the retreat.
Yes.
Yes, fine. How's that been? How's that change of gear?
It's been tough. As someone who is unashamedly and unapologetically a creative, to suddenly do something which is largely logistical has right. been a real nightmare.
Right,
I was going to turn it down, but I thought, no, nightmare is... I literally have nightmares about it.
I thought you were going challenge, and no. then you went, no, it's a proper nightmare.
It is a proper nightmare. Yes. So I'm an ENFP on the Myers-Briggs
okay.
spectrum,
yep.
And they worked out all the worst nightmares for each of the Myers-Briggs types. Mm. And for an ENFP, the worst nightmare is as follows. The rest of your life has been planned out for you in 15-minute segments, and it is a series of largely arbitrary tasks.
Ooh.
Or as I call it, running a retreat centre.
Right, okay. Yes. I got the sweats just hearing that.
Yes,
I think I must be an ENFP as well.
ENFP, yeah.
ENFP, yeah. Okay, so retreat centre is one part of your life. How many books have you written?
Four.
Four books?
Three under my name and one ghostwritten.
Really?
Yes, I like that, because even you're a writer, but you're excited that I've ghostwritten something.
That
somewhere there
exciting.
Exists a book that
so
is by me, but you don't know what it is.
No, I know the three. I don't know the fourth.
No.
How exciting.
So the Stand Up and Deliver, about my first year in comedy, which
yes.
you're in.
Yeah,
yes. The Gig Delusion, which you're in,
yep.
about sort of fictional.
They're my two favourites.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Tom Hillingthwaite, which yep. is my favourite, but you're not in
I'm
it.
I'm not so in it, never no, mind. But it's very good, isn't it?
Yeah. It's
that's,
my favourite.
That's landed very well, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. Yes. Now, and interestingly, because I know you've just written your fifth book.
Well, third that is entirely me.
Yes. You did
but then
the
I've done
with your wife.
The one with my wife, that's half, yes. so third and a half.
Third and a half.
And then a bit of I've written a page of another, yeah, so about third
yeah.
and a half.
Okay, we're equal now.
We'll call it that. We'll call it.
So Andy has written books, and we will add them to the Amazon guest list. We have a special list on the Amazon website for guests and their books that they've written. So my most recent book, Hark, is of course going to be up there as well. That is going grand. It's Hark, the biography of Christmas. So this is the time of year to get it right now. Time of recording, it's early November. So if you get it now, you can be reading it in the run to Christmas. I know we don't want to think about Christmas necessarily just yet, but in terms of reading a book all about it, that's the time to get it is about right now. Now we just crack bonfire night. That's, all bets are off after this point. Holidays are indeed coming. So do grab a hold of it if you so wish. Next episode, we have a Christmas special with, pretty much almost no guests. I suppose other people's Christmas specials add guests at Christmas time, but we normally have so many, we're going to get rid of a few. So next episode will be a feature-length ad, basically, for the Christmas book. And we will have guests, but they will be from Christmas past. Dickens, St. Nicholas, Bing Crosby, that sort of thing. In the meantime, books available, and we are here in November with a cavalcade of guests. And look who has just joined, the magic star on our November tree. I was going to say Christmas tree, remembered we're not there yet. So joining Andy and myself, it's the first man to fool Penn and Teller on their TV show Fool Us. It's BAFTA-winning comedy magician and legend, John Archer. John Archer, Andy Kind, comedy legend. You can decide which is comedy and which is legend.
That's absolutely
right. So when did you start, Mr. Andy Kind? When were you starting?
January 23rd, 2005.
Wow, that's specific. And John Archer, when did you start in this crazy world?
Of January 14th, 1996.
Wow.
Just made that up.
I'm thinking, I don't know why.
It was sometime in 96. Okay. Early 96.
Yes. And in yours, so has it always been magic and comedy in a combination for you?
Yeah, always done it. Some people have said, why don't you drop the magic? Mainly magicians. I quite like the combination, and I quite like the fact that there aren't many good comedy magicians. Mm. I'm not even sure if I'm one of them. I'm not saying I am, but if you look at like how many good, strong comedy magic acts there are in the country, there still aren't many. There's like Pete Furman, Paul Zenon, a few others.
You,
me, yeah, thank you.
And because you've won awards for best comedy magician in the world ever.
Yeah, but in the magic world, then, everybody's won awards.
Well, I was going to say, but you're just there's only about three of them. So in that case, it's well done. Yeah, very good.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
top
you
work.
Much. I did a gig for a Public Speakers Association a few weeks ago, and they're all public speakers there. And at the end, I mean, it went well. I thought I enjoyed it. But this guy came up at the end. Can I just say that you're brilliant, absolutely brilliant? He said, but can I just suggest something to you? And I felt like saying, no, not really, thanks. You've said enough, let's leave it. And he went, I think the magic took away from the magic. I said, what do you mean? He said, I loved all the comedy, but the magic just seemed to sort of distract from the comedy. I think you should have just maybe got rid of the magic. And of course I said, are you a fan of magic? He said, no, I don't really like magic. I thought, that's probably why then.
Yeah, that'll do it. So Andy, come on, your first gig is clearly memorable to you.
Yes, it was the Porticello Bar in Bath.
Oh yes,
yeah, Mirth Control.
Yeah,
and I drove it had only been booked that week. Mm. I'd only signed up on the site, and I talk about this in my first book actually, Stand Up and Deliver. It's the first chapter. I plug. Yeah,
go on.
Drove for two and a half hours to get there. Did my 10 minutes. and then drove for 2.5 hours back for no money. And like a lot of comedians, I think lots of people try comedy, but most people only try it once. If it had gone badly, I probably wouldn't have done a second one. But I remember being in the little kind of utility room, which was the green room, and just before I was about to come out, Ninia Benjamin had been on, and Electric Forecast were on.
Electric Forecast? Yeah. I've forgotten those guys. Them? Yeah.
Big Cook, Little Cook.
Yes, of course.
I was standing in the green room, and the door to the stage was my left, and the door to the carpet was my right, and I felt such a tug of war. I really wanted to run and just go back and just think, well, it's all right, I'll try it again sometime. But I went on stage and had a lovely time. I'd probably look back at now and think, why were they laughing? What were they laughing at?
I always wonder that.
Yes, particularly when you're watching it. But it was great, and you know, it's been 12 years of hammering a square peg into a round hole.
Fair
so that's what anything is.
If you hammer that long enough, the hole changes.
Long obedience in the same direction. That's what it is.
Not long obedience. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Very good.
Nietzsche said that. But is that true about comedy?
Fair play. Cool. That's quite intellectual.
Yes.
For this time of night. Well done. Yeah. Very good. Speaking of, so Big Cook, Little Cook, you mentioned there. Smooth Link. I'm bouncing back and forth like an untrained Graham Norton here. You have won is it a children's BAFTA, is that right?
CBBC BAFTA for a kid show. Help My Supply Teacher Still Magic.
Yes.
We did three. Help My Supply Teacher's Magic, Help My Supply Teacher's Still Magic, which got the BAFTA, and Help My School Triggers Magic.
Right.
So, yeah. So, I don't really know how you decide whether you've won the BAFTA or not. The show won the BAFTA. I never got a BAFTA. The producers got the BAFTA. Yeah. But I was in the show and I wrote the show. So I feel a little bit like I was probably slightly responsible for that BAFTA.
Have you seen the BAFTA? Have you offered?
I've touched it.
You've touched it. Yeah. I've won awards that I've never seen. I wasn't even invited to the award ceremony, but someone on TV thanked me, so I'll take it.
I wrote for the sketch show as well on ITV that Tim was in. Tim Vine.
Yeah.
And that won a BAFTA as well.
Yeah.
So technically, I sort of slightly claim that. But it's all a bit when telly shows win BAFTAs and you're vaguely involved. It's almost difficult to, you know. But I just claim it.
You could put double BAFTA winning, definitely.
I do double BAFTA winning. All of that.
Yeah. The British Comedy Awards. I wasn't even at the British Comedy Awards, but so I thought I can't put that on my CV as British Comedy Award winning because that's not me. I wasn't even invited. I was at home in my PJs, literally watching it at home in my pyjamas. But a month later, I got an email saying, now as a member of the Academy, you get to vote on next... I think I'm a member of the Academy now.
Yeah.
Wasn't invited to the thing, but I'm a member of the Academy.
You're like a Jedi now.
So I've never been... You know, the year later, I thought the invite might come as a member of the Academy. No.
And have you voted?
I vote every time, you know, but still at home in my pyjamas watching, you know, but it's ridiculous.
So two of my jokes have been used with permission by comedians on Live at the Apollo. My CV says, and his material has appeared on Live at the Apollo.
It's all fair.
Excellent.
It's all fair.
Which is true. Often some people introduce me as, he's been on Live at the Apollo. Yeah. He wouldn't be at Loughton Baptist Church if he'd been at Live at the Apollo.
Yes.
The Heptagon Club.
Seven guests, seven corners. The Heptagon Club with Paul Forenza.
So let's have another guest now, a comedian who has appeared on Live at the Apollo. I better check that. A comedian who you'd have thought has been on Live at the Apollo, but actually hasn't. But he has guested with us before. He's Chortle Website's Comedian of the Year, or something like that. And over in Philosophy Corner, guest number 3 of 7, Carl Donnelly.
My philosophy of comedy is to just only ever write about what you want to write about at any given time. But then, so that it can be a good and a bad thing. Because it means you're constantly writing. So I never sit down to write a new show. I'm just constantly writing a new show. This is always a new show. It's rolling along.
Yes.
And then sort of when it comes to, say, a few months for Edinburgh, I'm like, right, let's pick what I'm actually doing this show about.
Yeah.
But the danger of that is I change sort of what I'm talking about so drastically sometimes, I think. You know, there's a... If you wanted to have traction, you know, like big famous comedians, I think have to stick to a certain brand, don't they? Once they get to a certain point of fame,
you find what is you, and you do that.
And if you change it, then people won't like it.
Yes,
you know, there's comics that, you know, that has happened to in the last few years, and I think my philosophy is, you know, probably more destined for niche
cast but success. But that's fine, because I always think, you know, if you're I would love to see, you know, Tim Vine just does a show one year. It's just, now there's a long anecdotal story about my life.
So, you know, here's me telling you about therapy.
Never go, what?
But I think with Tim, there's an authenticity to what he does. I know him off stage as well, as you do.
Yeah.
And you know that that is what he's like. I don't think he's ever writing thinking that this is what my audience want.
Yes.
But I think there is a lot, once you get to the top, like, fame level, you know, like, I think part of your writing process is you have to sort of think about your audience.
Totally.
But my ethos is never think about your audience. Be selfish and write what
quite
you
right
want.
Quite right too. Quite right too.
Have a purity.
That's right. Be selfish. I like that.
Very nice indeed.
The second mention of the week there for Tim Vine. Of course, he was a previous guest on this podcast, so do seek out our back catalogue and find that lovely chat with Tim before. Miranda Hart, Sally Phillips, all have been fine and fun guests before, so do trawl through our back catalogue if you've not caught them. So this week it's a mix of comedy and magic, but given this is a podcast of people I like and bump into and invite along every few episodes, that includes a particular focus and zoom in on the world of religion. Now, this isn't a pulpit. There'll be no sermonising here. So enter stage left, Justin Brierley. Now, this is a man with a fascination for getting the two worlds of theists and atheists in a room together. And then it's slammed down, debate style. Yes, he runs the Unbelievable podcast. His new book, Unbelievable, is all about those encounters that he has set up. When I say set up, I don't mean he's, you know, kind of faked it like a wrestling match. He's not getting people to give a verbal pile drive here. You wince and whack me over the head with a chair or a Bible. No, what I mean is set up these debates and discussions with people like Richard Dawkins, Marcus Brigstocke, Darren Brown. Well, they're the famous ones, so they're the atheists, obviously. But here to explain more, anyway, is author, magazine editor, radio show host, Justin Brierley.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very kind. I've been on your podcast.
You have.
Now you've been on ours.
I know. It's such an incestuous world of podcasting.
A pottery, isn't it? Yes. It's a pod swap, really, isn't it? of some kind. So partly, you've got a book.
Yes.
But also, it's based on a very interesting, I think, life experience of the fact that you have been willingly partaking at regular intervals with discussions on theism, atheism, in a kind of a loggerhead scenario.
Yes, that's
right. It's a really odd way of explaining
It's yet another podcast, really, because The Unbelievable radio show, which I've been hosting for 11 and a half years, has also been a podcast for getting on for 10 years. And it's a weekly thing where I basically am joined by a Christian and a non-Christian to debate life, the universe and everything. Mm. And very often those conversations are around the existence of God.
Yes.
Is atheism true? Is Christianity true? Is there any evidence for the claims of the Bible, or, you know, did we, you know, is there meaning, is there purpose, meaning life, is there such a thing as real right and wrong, all those kinds of big philosophical issues.
Yeah, wow. It's quite a gladiatorial, I mean, it sounds to me like the Harry Hills TV burp, you know, fight! Chuck her in a room, see what happens, sort of thing. But
It can be. Some of them definitely are quite adversarial.
Yes.
Depends very much on the characters you've got in, and that's down to me really as to who I put with who.
Right.
So I'm like the boxing match promoter.
Nice, with, I like, you know, that.
This week we're going to square off Dawkins versus so and so.
Yeah.
But no, to be honest, because of that, they do vary a great deal, and some are just lovely chats.
Yes.
You know, very friendly, polite. And others are kind of full on, you know, verbal fist fights. And there's lots of very academic ones where you've got real experts in the studio and they just love being nerdy and academic and sort of sharing their wisdom.
Yeah.
And other times it's, you know, lay people who are just sort of armchair philosophers and atheists and Christians who are just sort of saying how they think of life.
They're like a pub chat sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's the stuff you get into with those. Well, I was always told growing up, you know, religion and politics are the two things to avoid in polite conversation. So it's nice that you've dived into that.
Yes,
and right, let's sort this out.
In a sense, the more that it is a conversation like you'd have down the pub, I think the more interesting it is, in a way, because that's where you often have the most interesting conversations, especially where actually people are open to actually listening to the other side,
right,
and they're not just coming in to you know, staunchly defend one particular point of view, but they're willing to kind of concede and find you know, where the other person does have maybe a point.
Yes. You know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 As I imagine you'd get with Richard Dawkins, of course. So I know
it depends. It depends what day you catch him on, to be
right,
honest.
Right, okay, yes.
So yeah, yeah. So the second time I had him on the show,
right,
he was quite
nice.
Well,
he came back. There you go. That's a good thing for a start, isn't it? You know, yeah.
He was quite nice, actually, yeah. And quite sort of congenial and said some nice things, actually, about the Bible.
Yes.
As well as some critical things.
Yeah.
And it depends on the environment he's in. In fact, the thing he said on that second time I had him on was, we sort of, I had him on with a rabbi and a Christian.
It sounds like a joke.
It does, I know.
It really does.
But we were debating the Old Testament, and this was in the context of, there was a series on Channel 5 at the time, sort of dramatised series on the Bible. Oh, yeah. And Dawkins, of course, in his God delusion, as an atheist, has said, sort of made some statements about the Old Testament, and particularly the God of the Old Testament. He has this long sort of sentence about the most megalomaniacal, pestilential, awful, you know, blah, 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 fictional character in all of history. And so the rabbi sort of pressed him on this and said, look, come on, Richard, isn't this an incredibly one-sided slant on what you find in the Old Testament? And he actually conceded that and said, yes, and it's just really for comic effect.
Right.
Okay. It's to get a bit of a laugh from the predominantly atheist audiences I speak to.
Okay, yeah.
Which I thought was, you know, okay, yeah. Fair enough.
Okay.
And at least he's actually said that.
Yeah.
This is rhetoric,
yes.
Not really a kind of, you know, logical argument, sure. Necessarily.
It made a good headline, didn't it?
Yes.
Well, it's a very long headline.
But, and he's good, at the end of the day, he's a good writer and a good communicator, and that takes you a long way.
And there is a reason that he is probably the most famous atheist of our generation, if not for the last century or so.
Yeah.
And I think that is because people, he knows how to sell his ideas.
Yeah,
really.
Completely. I think that's massive. And if you're ever going to become, you know, as he has been, a populariser of science or a populariser of atheism or a populariser of Christianity, you have to know how to sell an idea.
Yes.
In a way, Jesus was the past master of that. You know, if anyone has a claim to being one of the best communicators the world's ever known, it was probably him.
Yes. He had a mount, and there's a particularly famous sermon there, you know, so.
More from Justin in a moment, but Andy Kind, comedian, is finding himself also drifting into talking about his faith up there on a platform as well. So here he is on his morphing career.
As I move from being a comedian to an evangelist, it's really exciting, because when I do go and preach on a Sunday morning or on a Saturday evening, people are really surprised, because they're getting comedy, they're getting someone who's done comedy for 12 years, but they're also hearing a gospel message. And so I'm getting quite a lot of bookings, because there's that niche, it's quite unique. So to be able to offer, particularly on a Sunday morning, proper comedy, but also a proper message, I'm really excited by it.
It's quite a rare thing in that little Venn diagram in the middle bit.
And I've always tried. I've been an expert at finding very, very small niches that no one else cares about. If we're all kind of made in God's image, and we're able to laugh and create comedy, then I think that's a sign that he laughs. Isaac means he laughs, and so Genesis 21 verse 6,
there you go.
God has brought me laughter. Everyone
first book, so it's going to be, you know.
That was a word of prophecy that I was given when I started out doing church gigs. God has brought me laughter. Everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. Technically, not everybody has. Over 12 years.
Well, God got it wrong, didn't he?
He did get it wrong, yeah.
So next month, we go full Christmas on this podcast. This month, we're going to try and avoid mentioning Dickens, etc., as we return to our theological referee, Justin Brierley.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting that I've noticed that the Dickens... Dickens? That's the author. The other guy. Dawkins.
Dawkins.
Oh, yes. I get my Dickens very confused. It's very easy to lose that thing. His tweets, I know a lot of atheist comedians. The stereotype, I don't think, is entirely true, but there are certainly some vociferous atheist comedians who I've noticed on Twitter going, oh no, Dawkins, please, prof, just rein it in a little bit.
Yeah.
We agree with you on a lot of what you say, but you might want to phrase it a bit better than that.
Yeah.
Often it's not to do with religion as such, it's often to do with gender or politics, whatever it might be.
Yeah, and I think that's it. I think to some extent the cultural cachet that he had at one time has diminished somewhat because he has gaffed quite often on Twitter in one way or another. And there's a sort of regular cycle that people joke about now about, you know, Dawkins says something on Twitter, follows it up with lots of amendments and qualifications, then publishes a blog post about why he couldn't say what he meant to say in 140 characters.
And repeat
yes, ad nauseum. But the that's interesting because actually, I mean, in your sphere, I think there are quite a few, and I've had some of them on my show, you know, comedians who'd certainly take the same worldview as Dawkins, maybe put it across in a slightly more jocular way.
Yes.
But, you know, Ricky Gervais, classic example, and not afraid to regularly on Twitter or wherever give his views on religion. I've had on the show Marcus Brigstocke.
Oh, yes.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Because he had a book called God Collar.
That's right, yes.
And that was kind of about his sort of struggle with religion, which was a really interesting book, actually.
Yes.
And we had a really good edition of the show.
Yeah, I remember, I've not read all of that, but I remember glancing through it, though, and what I quite like about I've worked with Marcus a little bit over the years, and he's quite shouty and ranty and like that, but he plays up to that, certainly.
Yeah.
But people like Marcus and Robin Ince, they engage with religion, at least in a way, which I think some comedians just swipe it away, I think. And at least there's that attempt to grapple with something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And an ability to sit down and talk rather than...
But it was funny because Marcus, I think he was not your typical sort of, you know, he was not a Dawkins in the sense that he actually said in the book, I read The God Delusion, it was the closest I came to becoming a Christian, you know.
Right.
It actually had the opposite effect on
him. Yeah.
More Justin in a moment. Comedy, magic, John Archer.
Rude of us not to mention Penn and Teller.
Foolers, yes.
The first person to fool Penn and Teller.
There's hundreds now, but...
Now you're part of a long list, isn't it? You
know, every magician in the world has fooled Penn and Teller on their websites. But was the first, before the series even was made. This is what I was on. Yeah, that was great.
That must have been quite... Especially in the room where it's not happened before, everyone's waiting for that moment.
But not only did it not happen before, we didn't actually know what the show was going to be. Right. So all the magicians were approached, sort of, in the UK, they approached it, and a few abroad, I think, but it was mainly UK magicians for that special. And they were all told the concept of the show. You perform a trick, Penn and Teller watch it and try and work it out. And the general consensus was... They're going to be really nasty to us. They're going to expose how we've done it. They're going to say it. Yeah. They're not going to be that nice. And also, actually, we don't think it's possible to fool Penn and Teller. We're all thinking, Penn's not that smart on magic, and he'd admit that himself. But Teller is really smart. He's written some great books on it, and he's studied a lot. And we all thought, there's no way. You know, all the methods, we all know all the methods. You know, to fool any magician is difficult. So we all went on thinking, what they're going to be like to us, and nobody's going to fool them. And there was about three acts went on before me, and I didn't think I was going to fool them. They tried to get me to do other tricks. The researchers and people, said, we've heard that this is really funny, and we've heard you do a trick like that that's really good. And I said, well, it's true, but the only trick I've got that vaguely stands a chance of fooling them is this one that I came up with a method myself. And it's a well-known premise of a trick. Five objects and, they choose and you've effectively predicted which one they're going to choose. And I sort of knew that in their minds they would be watching how I was doing it, and by the way I was doing it they'd have been ticking off methods in their head. And I knew they'd be saying, well, he's not done that and he's not done that. And I was just hoping that at the end they'd go, hang on a minute, he hasn't used any of the methods we thought, so now we have to try and guess how he's done it. And that's what happened. And I was just, fortunate. I mean, they made some guesses that were close, but thankfully not close enough that it could be deemed.
I love the way that I've watched every episode of that because I love watching it, and I'm a magic junkie. I love magic.
Right.
I used to.
Have you watched the American series?
I've only watched the ones on ITV, whatever they show.
Oh no, because they made three seasons in America.
Now, oh okay,
and some amazing series.
Really,
full US. That's cool.
It's nice.
I like. Do you know what's annoying now though is on the American series they get a trophy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, an FU trophy for foolers.
So you get to go to Vegas. Presumably the Americans, they go to Blackpool, do they?
Yeah, come over.
What was it like when Penn came up to you at the end and said, "Have you considered dropping the magic?" Was that?
Yeah. He said, "Drop the magic and the comedy." Yeah.
What I always love is the way, because it's something we don't normally see, is that bit where they go, they don't want to reveal the trick, but I love the way they go, "All I'm going to say to you is, you know, double centipede," and I think you'll know what I mean. Like that, you know?
And the magician goes like that, his shoulders dropping.
You got me. I was going for triple centipede, but you got me a double centipede. I love all that stuff.
He's
I love
the centipedes out of his jacket.
I love that little insight into the magician's lingo that we've never quite caught on to. That's always nice. But
my favourite is when they draw a little picture. Oh, yeah. And they go, "We just want to show you this," and then and then they go and they show them a picture, and the guy goes, "Yeah," and then they just set light to the picture and burn it.
Yes, that's always nice. I was wondering if they just, it's actually teller writing in there, "If you don't agree to this, we've kidnapped your family." Oh yes, you've worked it all out, thank you.
Now and again you do get people who argue with them, and that's great.
Yeah.
You get some people who go, no, you know, I haven't got it. And then Penn gets really annoyed and starts just describing the method.
Yes.
And just like, you know, and they're like, "You shouldn't have argued."
Have you seen do you see many magic tricks that you can't work out yourself? Or do you get them all nowadays?
I do now and again, not as often as I'd like. So the reason you get into magic is you love that feeling you get when you watch something and you go, "What? Cannot understand that." You know, you see somebody getting a box and then they open the box and they've vanished. And you go, "No, that, you know."
Yeah.
And the problem is, as soon as you get into magic, you lose that wonder.
Of course, yeah.
That wonder that you always had. So when you get it, it's really special.
Yeah.
When you see something, and it does happen now and again, I see something. But more often than now, it's more about the performance than actually the method.
Well, actually, I remember the joy.
I see some guys do, you know.
I watched, you know, Steve Price.
Yeah.
I watched him with Danny Buckler for the first time. And Danny had never seen Steve. And Danny's like, "Oh, come on then, let's see this up-and-comer." And the joy of seeing Danny's face when he suddenly saw the joke, I don't know how he did that. And I go, "But I'm a magician. How do I not know how he did that?" You know, and his jaw was on the floor for about a day.
What was the trick? Can you remember?
He got quite a large fee.
How did he do that? He got a gig. That was really annoying, Danny.
He got me to pay him up front. That's what it was. It was something. I think it must have been a playing card in a balloon. It was like, pick your card. Okay, I could pick any card, and then I pop some balloons, and it's the red balloon. You want the red balloon? Pop the red balloon, and then there's the card.
Yeah.
So something like that.
That would fool Danny.
Yeah, fair enough.
And another fine comedy magician now, just mingling here with our other guests at the Heptagon Club. This is Steve Legg.
Welcome, Steve. Welcome. So how would you describe yourself, Steve Legg? International baffler, I believe.
And, international baffler and funny guy, someone called me.
Excellent.
I do comedy magic.
Excellent.
Done so for 29 years as a job.
29 years.
29 years. I worked out, I've been to the moon and back 7.5 times.
Wow.
On the road.
All for one gig. There you go.
What a gig.
Yes.
At 45p a mile.
Exactly.
We cleaned up.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Yes, so I did comedy magic. I write books. Yes, I saw Paul Daniels make an elephant disappear.
I saw that was good.
It was amazing.
It was very good.
Do you know what? Like, I could never figure it out. And would you believe it? Yeah. I was at my local gym chatting to this guy, Pat, who I had no idea used to work at BBC on props, on the Paul Daniels show.
Okay.
On that particular shoot.
Really?
And he told me how they did it.
Really?
And it's how I kind of thought, but I thought, that's impossible. Right. It was outside. In a field,
yes.
And an elephant went into a tent. Debbie McGee danced around in a pink
bikini. I've seen it. It's incredible.
Yeah. Paul Daniels fired a gun. Tent fell to the floor.
Yeah.
Elephant disappears.
Yeah. I showed it to my kids recently on YouTube.
You're kidding.
It's amazing. Like a couple of months ago, I was showing it to my kids. Like this is proper magic for the olden days.
That really is.
Not like the rubbish your dad does, you know. Yeah.
And that's what got me into magic.
Well, when we stop talking, I'm going to be asking you properly exactly if you'll reveal your secrets.
I will.
I'm slightly concerned this was in a gym that Pat, the props guy, wasn't going to show you the elephant reappearing in the middle of the gym locker room, because that would be quite inappropriate. Okay, so then you did the magic, and of course, which doesn't come overnight, you have to practice.
Yeah, well, I used to specialise in escapology, because I was really into Houdini as well, so you used to get a straitjacket.
And then you got out of that.
And got out of that.
So to speak.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Never heard that before.
I'm sure you haven't.
Now, Steve Legg's other job is magazine editor. He edits Sorted magazine, in which I have a regular column. This issue, that is about the potted history of festive PR, because I am, of course, on a bit of a festive PR train at the moment, with the new book, Hark, the Biography of Christmas. I would say the first print run completely sold out, leaving me rather awkwardly with almost no books at the actual book launch. But we had a few, which was nice. We had more wine than books, but that is a good sign of any book launch, I think. We had a good gang of attendees as well, including Liz Earle, you know, from the skincare, well-being, entrepreneur and business side of things. We had Timmy Mallett as well. So two perennially young, never-aging Peter Pan types, I suppose. Appropriate for a book that even includes mention of the festive origins of Peter Pan. Did you know the first ever Captain Hook was played by Daphne du Maurier's dad, and that he was so scary that kids fainted? Yes, all true. Also at the launch, QI elf Stephen Colgan. Again, how appropriate. An elf, a QI elf at a Christmas book launch. Fantastic. So he is on at the very end of this episode. Anyway, trivia, whether on Peter Pan or other Christmassy tidbits and all that sort of backstory, is all in the new book. Please do buy it. And almost more importantly than that, please do review it on Amazon, if you would. That is your bring a bottle moment this week. We do have a bring a bottle opportunity for you to give something back. And the one thing we ask of you this particular episode is a nice review on the old Amazon of the book. You know, if you consider it, I've only got a handful of reviews up there at the minute. Frustratingly, about half of them are rather misled by the cover into thinking it was a joke book. So their reviews read, you know, I liked it. It was quite like a nice little history book. I enjoyed the history, but I thought it was going to be a joke book. So 3 stars. You know, there is a famous saying about judging books by covers, but let's not even go there. All I'm saying, it would be quite lovely if you would consider lending a nice, well-judged review, either on Amazon or Goodreads. That's another fine website as well. Some lovely words would be fantastic. I think that's your bring a bottle moment this time. So what else have we been up to then, apart from book launches and things like that? I recently hosted the Church and Media Conference. That was good fun. One guest I was chatting to there, I should have shoved a microphone in front of him, was actor David Jesse. Now, if you don't know him by name, you will in 5 years. Right? He stars in the TV show Containment. He was also in Cloud Atlas with Tom Hanks, loads of other things as well. He's a lovely, lovely guy. And I had a choice. Do I chat to him like a normal person? Or do I be that guy who whips out a phone and starts interviewing him for a podcast? And unluckily for you listeners, I chose the former, you know, just chatting normally. But Steve Legg, who we just heard, well, his Sorted Magazine podcast, they did whip out a microphone and interview him. So if you'd like to hear David Jesse, you can find Steve's podcast and hear that. Yeah, you know, Steve Legg and Justin Briley, both guests this week, both of them have podcasts, Sorted and Unbelievable. Both of them edit magazines, Sorted and Premier Christianity magazine. Both of them, I'm in their most recent magazines, in Sorted. I've got a regular column in there. In Justin's, well, it's actually the next issue. It's the Christmas December issue. I've written an article about the key people who made the modern Christmas, from Dickens to St. Nicholas to Cromwell. And I'm going to bring you a sort of audio equivalent of that next episode with 7 guests on this Heptagon Club from Christmas past, from Dickens to Bing Crosby, that sort of thing. But anyway, let's not get ahead of ourselves. That's all to come. This time we are obsessing on comedy, Christianity and conjuring. So let's dwell on all three of those right now with Justin Briley once again, who recently did a big interview with Derren Brown.
How was Derren Brown then? What was
Derren Brown was, that was like such a dream for me to get an interview with him. We did it a bit differently to the usual interview because normally it's me moderating the two points of view. But in that case, just because he's a busy guy, obviously, I'd managed to book an interview with him after a performance of his Miracle stage show last year. So I went to see that in Nottingham and interviewed him afterwards in his sort of hotel room. And what's fascinating about Derren is he was a Christian at one time and had, to some extent, you know, an evangelical faith before he lost it sort of university days, really. Kind of coinciding, actually, with the time he kind of really started to get into stagecraft and magic and illusion and so on. And so he doesn't sort of tend to wear his atheism in a very sort of overt way, but certainly a lot of his shows and TV programs, there's a dimension to them which is sort of critical at some level of claims about the supernatural, obviously, and his view is that I can replicate so much of what the charlatans, in his view, do, you know, whether it's the psychics or the miracle healers or whatever it might be. And certainly the show that I went to see, you know, the night before I interviewed him, Miracle, which was on Channel 4 later, is just the most extraordinary show, but very challenging for anyone who does believe in sort of supernatural miracles and things. Because what Derren does as a showman is kind of recreate a lot of what you might see in, you know, your classic sort of healing evangelist type rally in a kind of in the Christian subculture. I think the problem is I think it's absolutely valid to have criticisms of that. I would share a lot of the criticisms of what sometimes goes on in those scenarios. I think the danger is when you throw the baby out with the bathwater and assume that that's all that's happening all the time in those scenarios. But we had a fascinating chat about that. We sat down. I was only expecting to get like half an hour with him. It turned into sort of 90 minutes because we just got on really well, which was nice. And it was an interview, but it was sort of a little bit of a debate as well at the same time, where we would back and forth on things like the evidence for the resurrection and other issues around, you know, whether atheists can get meaning and that kind of thing ultimately. And he seemed to enjoy it, you know, and in a way, I think, because he hadn't had, I guess in his current sort of, you know, what he does now, he doesn't often get the chance to reflect with someone who on these things he did hold, you know, to be true at one time. He doesn't often get the chance to kind of talk at any depth about them. I think he actually quite enjoyed sort of having that chat with someone who does obviously still, you know, hold to these beliefs.
And did you walk away wanting to rob a bank whenever you saw the company?
Well, I did say from the outset, look, just one thing, don't do some trickery that makes turns me into an atheist by the end of this this interview. And he said, he kind of rolled his eyes and said, oh, don't worry, you know.
You'll be safe here.
It's
lifting his cape up in the air, twiddling the moustache.
But I think what I actually got the impression of, and actually speaking to other people who know him and what he does in advance, is that a lot of that stuff is very much has to be on the stage in order for it to work. You're not in the environment where you're just sitting down for a chat where there's the same kind of things he can do where he can influence you in that way. I'm sure there are things he could do, you know, because he's brilliant. It's like, I think there's a lot of what I understood from others I've spoken to is a lot of what gets passed off as quote unquote mind control on stage or on TV is actually illusion.
Yes.
That's the fact of
it. Totally, yes.
So the things that you think of him, wow, he's got this amazing ability to tap into someone's psyche and make them think something or do something, actually, there's a lot of illusion there.
Whenever there's a thing of I'm going to draw the picture.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, someone says it's a boat and then a minute later goes, oh, it's a boat. Yeah. Someone must have...
And when he makes you think that he says, and there were 10 things that I positioned on the way into the theatre to make you choose that thing. Well, no, obviously not. There's a trick.
Yeah. It's very cleverly done.
But it is very cleverly done. Because he makes you think that he can read your mind and he can... You know, so...
Well, I actually, in fact, not far from where we're having this chat now, I used to live, and Darren Brown was a good friend of my flatmate then, and so he came over for a Chinese takeaway after his after his show in Woking at the theatre, and we had a Chinese, and it was odd, because he does that, he's got that very deadpan sense of humour.
Yeah.
And I think because he's used to telling people things are one way when actually it's not, it's the opposite, and he starts doing, I don't know, I suppose jokes... But like one of them, he said, oh, well, the duck bones, when we finish with the duck, you get the duck bones, you put it in a glass of milk overnight, leave it on the side, and then tomorrow morning, it's ducky milk, isn't it? And we're like, what? And he said, yeah, ducky milk, and then you can use it, you get that, you can rub it on rashes and warts, and it heals them up in no time, you know, and it's ducky milk. And we're looking and going, is that a thing? And he's going, no, it's a joke. Oh, right, I see. You could just signal with a little, I don't know. And, you know, you're just there going, I'm not quite sure if he's trying to hypnotise me to think that ducky milk is a thing, or if it's just a deadpan, you know, spoof fact kind of thing. But you could see, you know, that's just that manner that they have, these people.
Yeah. But what it taught me, kind of doing that, because I always have been a big fan of Darren Brown. And so it was a bit... there was a certain element of hero worship when I met him.
Yeah.
But actually, when you sit down and talk to him, he's quite normal, you know. And it is a big stage persona.
Yeah.
But he's actually quite kind of...
Totally.
...modest and diffident and not terribly... quite self-effacing, really, when you meet him in person.
He's cracked magic very, very
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Yeah.
A previous guest, Dr. Krish Kandai, has spoken to us on a previous podcast about his charity Home for Good, which is a fostering and adoption charity. It's well worth a re-listen on his personal take on it, receiving children in the middle of the night, not knowing what language they're speaking, trying to find them the right snacks from the kitchen cupboards. It's amazing stuff. Anyway, so I wanted to ask Krish, as we approach the year's end, about his topical take on his charity, about how it's impacted by things like the refugee crisis. So be warned, this interview contains graphic images. I know it's audio, but Just as they say on radio, the pictures are better. In audio, the content can sound brutal. So that being said, the news is graphic itself right now. So with his take on the refugee crisis, Home for Good's Krish Kandaya.
In terms of the international side of things, obviously we see a lot of the papers about the refugee crisis and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Does that impact then on the fostering and the, you know...
Really does. Yeah, so our little charity got involved about 18 months ago when that little picture of Aylan Kurdi, that little boy from Syria, washed up on a beach in Bodrum, Turkey, three-and-a-half-year-old with his kind of red t-shirt and blue trousers, and it became an internet sensation that woke the Western world up to the refugee crisis. And our Prime Minister said that the UK would take 20,000 refugees over 5 years, and he said we were going to focus on unaccompanied refugee children. And he said this is going to be a modern day kinder transport. And that's when our ears pricked up, because some of the listeners might remember in 1939 the UK received 10,000 Jewish children who were escaping the Nazi death squads. And we thought, wow, you know, if we're going to do that again, where are you going to put these kids? Because we're already, 9,000 foster carers short. So we launched a little campaign, and just over the course of a weekend, we had about 8,000 people say they wanted to help to foster unaccompanied refugee children. Since then, we've got about 15,000. The struggle for us has been, for better or for worse, the government has closed the route, the safe route, for unaccompanied refugee children to come to the UK. They have not fulfilled that promise at all. And so the main way that refugee children are coming to the UK is through unsafe routes. So some are being people trafficked, some are going on the back of lorries, some are, just finding a way to get here. And so last year alone, I think we had around 3,500 unaccompanied refugee children, what they call spontaneous arrivals. So they didn't come through any government route, they just arrived here.
I see,
so there is a massive need for foster carers for those children and young people.
See, that's quite an item, though, because I get my news from the paper and that sort of stuff. And then I read about the fact that the government were changing the how many they were going to allow in, which of course was, rather upsetting and shocking and surprising. Well, maybe not so surprising after, you never know what to expect. But so then, of course, in my head, I'm thinking, oh, well, this... And, of course, it's always an exact thousands, so it's not... Yeah. Instead of 20,000, it's 5,000, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, OK, so they are not coming... They're not coming here. But, of course, there is still that desperate need.
Yeah.
And so, you don't even consider safe route versus unsafe route. It's not like it's going to...
They're going to come anyway.
Yeah, it's not going to stop. It just needs to be managed, I suppose, and handled.
And I guess the profile for the kids that are coming, just to be able to make that journey on your own... they are going to be older kids.
Yes,
and often I was in Lebanon meeting refugee families there, and many of them had sent their kids out of Syria because they didn't want them to be recruited into Assad's army, or they didn't want them to be recruited by ISIS. So I've got teenage boys, an 18-year-old, 17-year-old. If I thought that those were the two likely options for them, I'd do everything I could to get them out of the country. So that's what's happening. And my kids, some of them are about to leave home and go to university or go and get a job. They still need a parent in their life. Being stuck in a bed and breakfast somewhere is not sufficient. Many of the kids in places like Syria have been out of school for 4 or 5 years, so they haven't had the kind of help they might need. They're in another culture, another language, all sorts of challenges. So we think if we can get families to wrap around those kids, they have a better chance of integrating, feeling safe, not getting re-trafficked again. And so that's why we think foster care or supported lodging might be the best solution for them.
So Home for Good is the all details on the internet and stuff.
Yeah, homeforgood.org.uk. If you're interested in fostering, adoption, or supporting those that do, we'd love to hear from you.
And for more on Krish's charity Home for Good, do check out his website or indeed his many books. Now, our seventh guest this week is also a writer with a new book out next year, and he's been on before. He's a favourite of this podcast. Here is a QI elf, researcher, writer, and star of our Heptagon Club Live earlier this year. And I think this is our last portion of that live show to be pumped out to you now. Speaking about 8 minutes, here is Stephen Colgan.
Please welcome QI elf and star of this podcast. He's been on many times before, Mr. Stephen Colgan, ladies and gentlemen. All the way to the stage. Why are you doing
this? This is going to be a bit of a cock-up, because when he phoned me up and said, can you come up and talk, about 7 or 8 minutes? I thought he meant talk about 7 or 8 minutes, so I found some really interesting facts about... And I'll try and do it in less than 8 minutes, but I thought I'd try and find some really interesting facts about 8 minutes. 8 minutes is the average time it takes to hoover a room properly. About twice as long as when a man does it. It's about the same time it takes to clean a toilet properly, to iron two shirts, to boil two eggs or ruin one. And one in every 8 minutes worldwide is spent on Facebook. Right, in 8 minutes you can listen to Stairway to Heaven once. You can listen to the Parrot sketch twice. You can listen to Song 2 by Blur 4 times. Makes sense, doesn't it? And of course you can listen to 8 minute waltzes. You could also, if you were Sir Robert Liston in the 1830s, you could have done 16 amputations in 8 minutes. Well, this is the time before anaesthetic, and this guy was so popular because he was so damn quick. You just go boom, 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 and your leg was off. But speed didn't always mean accuracy. He famously once castrated a man at the same time as amputating his leg. It gets worse. In his most famous case, he took the fingers off his assistant, the legs off the patient, and the coattails of an eminent doctor who was observing. And the patient, as assistant, and the patient and the assistant and the doctor all died. So it's very possibly the only operation in medical history with a 300% mortality rate. Okay. I found all sorts of things in 8 minutes. I mean, 8 minutes into a film. There's some great lines in there, 8 minutes into a film. 8 minutes into Star Wars, you get, she'll die before she'll tell you anything. So, I found that 8 minutes into Taxi Driver, you get, some nights they clean out the blood. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the radio series, 8 minutes in is the line, lucky escape for Arsenal if it did. Okay, here's that. In 8 minutes, my heart will beat, on average, 576 times. That's about 72 beats a minute. If I was a blue whale, Alan Davis's favourite subject, my heart would beat about 48 times, because it only beats about 6 beats per minute. If I was an Etruscan shrew, how many do you reckon? How many in eight minutes?
8,000.
We're getting close. 12,000. 12,000. 12,088. Yeah, believe it or not, it's 1,511 beats per minute. Incredible, isn't it? Lightning will strike the earth 48,000 times in 8 minutes. Wayne Rooney will have earned £168. That's actually serious. I mean, this is based on, I mean, I don't know what he's, has he gone to China yet?
No, you're asking the wrong person.
Oh, yeah, you're asking about, well, me. I'm a Cornishman. Name a full Cornish football team. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, Ponsonooth United, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was on about 30,000 a day, I think he was actually earning at one point when I did this, which is quite recently. Yeah, so £168 he'll have earned in 8 minutes. A nurse, by comparison, will have earned 36p. In eight minutes, IKEA will serve 30,440 meatballs worldwide. McDonald's will serve 32,000 beef burgers worldwide. And Peruvians will eat 913 guinea pigs. Apparently, they're really, really tasty. They're a very popular protein in Peru. Because they're kind of like an unfinished rabbit anyway, aren't they? They just haven't stuck the ears and the little tufts on the back, haven't they? This will be an interesting one. This is for the nerds amongst you. Do you know, in 8 minutes you could do 1/13th of the Kessel Run if you were piloting the Millennium Falcon? Now, the Millennium Falcon, apparently, according to various Star Wars fan sites and things I went to, the Millennium Falcon has a top speed of 28 light years per hour. And as the Kessel Run is 15 parsecs in length, and a parsec is 3.2556 light years in length, that's how far it would go. I really go into this. We do our research properly.
That is research.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That's because if we put anything out wrong on QI, within 30 seconds of the broadcast going out, we get, dear so-called QI, on your show tonight. Last year, we actually took points off Josh Widdicombe because of something he'd said wrong the year before. And what he said wrong was the number of a particular A road in Devon. Yeah. That's what our fans are like. Okay, I'm going to finish with this, that the Earth rotates at 1,040 miles per hour. So in 8 minutes, we've all travelled 138 miles. So while I've been doing this, we've travelled 138 miles. The Earth also goes around the Sun at 66,600 miles per hour. So that's a further 8,880 miles we've all travelled. But the Milky Way galaxy is also rotating at 515,000 miles per hour. So our solar system has moved 68 0.6666 miles during these 8 minutes. I reckon, working that out, that's a total of 77,684 miles that we've all travelled in the time I've been speaking, which, using the HMRC's tax rate of 45p per mile for business travel, I reckon Paul owes me, in petrol money, about 34,927 quid and 80p. But I'll let you off the 80p.
Good luck. Stephen Colgan, ladies and gentlemen.
Stephen's got a new book out in the new year called A Murder to Die For. I've got two kids' books out next year as well. Did I mention that? Noah's Car Park Ark and Moses and the Exodus Express. Just some good, fun children's books, beautifully illustrated as well. Not by me, I should add. More on that in the new year. Right now, I'm all about the Christmas book, Hark, The Biography of Christmas. Do seek it out online. Chuck us a nice review, if you would, on Amazon or on Goodreads. Thank you very much. And all of our guests who've written books, well, they go on the Amazon guests list. You will find the link to that on our Facebook page. And that includes this guy.
So your book,
yes,
is unbelievable. Justin Brierley is the author, the man whose voice is not mine in this conversation. And it's out now. And so it's called Unbelievable Why, After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. And it's purchasable from all good stockists.
Yes, there's even a website for it called unbelievablebook.co.uk.
Excellent, excellent. Well, people can go there and, and buy and find these things out. Marvellous. Well, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me on your podcast. Well,
and also people can find your podcast as well, can't they?
Indeed, yeah. If you want to listen to editions of Unbelievable, where we have these fascinating conversations week in, week out, just go to premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable and excellent. You can listen to more than 10 years worth.
Wow.
If you ever feel like doing that.
It's like one a year, so it's like 10. No, of course. So, plenty more than that.
So there's, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, man. Actually, man is what I mean. I've just noticed that we have had 7 men this week, and that is bad. We have failed the Bechdel test this week, especially in the current climate. We must try harder. You know what, I will confess, I've asked actually 3 female guests on this month, and all of them said not just now. I've asked 2 male guests on this month, and both said yes. So I'm trying, I'm doing my bit, but I think it's just that women have more sense than to be on this. I think they've got stuff to do. Men clearly trying to skive off real work. But next time, we will try harder to get the balance better. Well, not next time, because next time is our Christmas special. And yeah, actually, that's it's all historical guests, really, next time. And I hate to say, but having written the book, it's a very white Christmas and a very much a Father Christmas. It's not an ethnic Christmas and a Mother Christmas. No, it's mostly white men through the Christmas history story, unfortunately. Apart from Mary, she did quite a lot. Queen Victoria, she did a fair amount. Cecil Francis Alexander wrote once in Walt David City. But next time, it's mostly people like Dickens and St. Nicholas and Bing Crosby and things like that. We will get festive then. If you've got any particular facets of Christmas that you'd like explored, we're happy to do that and do a sort of bespoke history of Christmas next time. If you want us to explore crackers or turkey or Christmas jumpers or Die Hard or the Christmas tree, whatever. Let us know what you want us to unwrap and unpick. Email me, paul@paulcarenza.com. Happy to basically do a podcast of order, really. Anything Christmassy and festive and historical, we'll delve into that next time. paul@paulcarenza.com if you'd like to email me. The plan is then a standard episode again. We'll follow that in January or February with 7 more guests, as usual. And then that's probably the end of this series. That will be the end of series 2 of the Heptagon Club, because I need to then have a break and go and record lots of more conversations. If you'd like to encourage us back sooner, if you like what we do, you can donate on heptagonclub.co.uk. Click donate. Or at the top of the page, seek out the word Patreon, and that is a way to give to us regularly and get stuff back in return. That is a host of benefits for you there, and that will keep us going. So whether you donate or share the episode or like our Facebook page or do us a review on iTunes or do my book review on Amazon, any or all of these things, I thank you. Hey, you, has anybody said to you today? A big thank you to all my guests this week. We've had a nice mix. 4 comedians, 2 magicians, 2 magazine editors, 5 writers. Somehow that all adds up to 7. Thank you to Rob Halligan for the music. Visit our Facebook page, subscribe, like, rate, review, share. And we will see you in December for our Christmas special. It will be properly Christmassy.